Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Hello.
And Terry Zaffalon as well.
Yeah, I noticed that last week. Terry Zaffalon.
Jan, what happened to those settings on the transcript? It didn't really come out properly, did it?
No, it didn't. So I'm on the Apple platform, and when the podcast came through, I'd never noticed it before for any other podcast, and I listened to a lot of podcasts, and there was a transcription section, and I was amazed because my name is a non-English standard name, so it's spelt with a J, but it's pronounced as a Y sound, as Jan. I was surprised that it got it right for me, and then it got to Terry's surname, which I think is spelled and sounds, you know, is phonetic, and instead of DeFellin, it came through as Zaffalon.
But interesting thing is about that, if you listen back to that podcast, Graham ever so slightly mispronounces my surname. He puts an extra S at the beginning of DeFellin, so it comes out Terry Zaffalon or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it did.
Yeah. So I had to be careful not to be so lazy with my pronunciation this week, because now, you know, thanks a lot to the tech bods at Apple now. Now we've got an audit trail on the things we say. Ugh. Worried.
Yeah.
Now.
I mean, thanks, Apple. Nobody really asked you to do that. Yeah, we all know why that is, don't we?
Yeah, God, like, big tech,
hey, ruining podcasts, ruining good old-fashioned analog podcasts.
Big tech, yeah.
Ruining everything again.
Which is why we love going to watch non-league, isn't it? Away from all the stats and the VAR of top-level football. And we had a great weekend at non-league, didn't we, this weekend, guys?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, Saturday was a special day, wasn't it?
It was a very, very special day, and we all had a lovely, lovely day. As Whiteleaf were already confirmed leading up to the game as champions, which was great. And they thumped Greenways, who, poor guys, looks like they've had an awful season. Beat them 8-3. And I think they were on 98 goals they'd conceded before the game, and it obviously sailed right past that. We took some great pleasure in reminding the goalkeeper of, actually, who had a fairly good game considering he spent a lot of the time picking the ball out of the net. I was speaking to one of their players after the match, actually. Poor guy. He was just like, it's like this every week. It's awful.
Really?
So, yeah, I really had a feel for him. But, you know, they kept on going. They didn't lose their heads. And, you know, considering the hiding they took, which is just one of many that they've suffered all season, good for them. Good sports.
And they scored three goals, too.
So, what, if get promoted, they're going to go up into step five of non-league. Back where we were about 10 years ago, wasn't it?
We're now back up to the lowest point that the old Whiteleaf FC have been in their recent history before their demise. They went down to this level. They dropped out of the Isthmian. Yeah, we're one tier below, behind the Isthmian League, which is where Whiteleaf FC were when they dropped out of existence. And AFC Whiteleaf, in a very short space of time, have now got themselves up where they are one season away. And we shall see. It all depends on Kelly, the owner, and how much more money he wants to put in to see whether or not we can go even further and get into the Isthmian League. But the thing that excites me the most, chaps, is that we are now back at that level. Whatever league we go in, we're back at that level where we can participate in the FA Cup again.
Oh, yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. That is brilliant.
Yes.
Which is good news.
Yes.
I do have that right, don't I, Graham?
Yes,
because it was you who told me this.
Yeah, you so, do have that right, because I told you. It's my fact.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. I'm just utilising it. It was you who told me this.
Yeah, so there'll be a draw, I presume, at the beginning of August, once they know all the teams that are going to be in it. Yeah, extra preliminary round, here we come.
And as we know, they're good money spinners as well.
Yeah.
So only have to win a few games and we can trouser a few £1,000.
A lot of fun in the late summer sunshine. But that's next season. We've still got this one to get out of the way yet. Having gone through all the emotion of going to watch Whiteleaf lift up the Scaffold Div 1 Championship on the Saturday, I then had to watch the North London Derby Which actually turned out to be okay in the end. It was one of the most unconvincing wins for Arsenal. It ended up 3-2. Could have been very different if some decisions had gone differently, but as it was, it wasn't. So Arsenal was still in the title race. As much as they are in the title race, Man City still don't look like they're going to slip up between now and the end of the season. But who knows? Who knows? By this time next week, things could be very different. They won't be. They could be very different. And the reason why it's just Arsenal and City now is because Liverpool slipped up again, didn't they, Terry?
Again. 2-2 against West Ham.
We did say this, didn't we, a few months ago when Klopp announced that he was going, that, you know, he was serving notice, wasn't he? So It's not really much of a surprise, is it, that it's kind of petered out for them, is it?
No, it's not that much of a surprise. And I'm pretty certain we did warn against this when we discussed the news. I believe we were optimistic that it wouldn't happen. But of course, it is something that you can have, the old lame duck syndrome.
Yeah.
But I think that more to it, no football coach should ever serve notice. It's just not that kind of job. Or even the best of them are only a few games away from the sack.
Yeah.
So no football coach should ever have the audacity to be able to say, oh, I'm giving notice. I said, no, mate, what's more likely is you'll be fired before you get the chance to quit. Because that's how football at that level works.
Yeah.
And you wonder whether or not that, therefore the football gods are punishing Jurgen Klopp for his hubris. And as you know, the Sound of Football has a very, very, very keen hubris radar.
Oh, yes, we do. We do. The little hubris alarm does ring occasionally. And when it does, we also get up and start rubbing our hands with glee. Hubris. Oh, yes, we love it. We love a bit of hubris. Well, of course, it could go the other way, because on that same episode where we were talking about Jurgen Klopp, Barcelona, Xavi had said he was going to leave Barcelona at the end of the season. And now, Jan, it appears he's not. He's changed his mind. Hasn't changed anything for Barcelona, is it, though?
No, it hasn't. But he, I mean, so after the game that where he resigned, Barcelona went on an absolute tear. And that run only ended in the Champions League defeat. And then, obviously, they lost the game after that against Real Madrid as well. But they did so well. You know, it seems that whatever problems were around at the time when he felt he had to resign have gone, because they're performing really well on the pitch. So, yeah, good. Good he's hanging around, I think.
Good for Barcelona too, because I think it would have been awkward for them to realise that they couldn't afford a top-line manager, which I suspect might be something to do with it. Please don't go, because people, then they'll realise just how, like, oh, well, this is the management shop that we're shopping in now. And I think it is good for him. I think Xavi hopefully has learnt a lesson in not getting carried away sometimes. And again, don't put your notice in. You're a football coach. You know, if you think to yourself, you know what? I'm done with this, guys. I'll wait and see if I get fired. And then if I get to the end of the season and I'm still unfired, then I'll quit then. I think with Liverpool, it's probably different, because the feeling is that some toe rag in the media had got hold of the story, and so that they were trying to get ahead of the story. But I think, on reflection, if I was working in the comms team at Liverpool, I'd have said, no, let that toe rag drop the story. You send him to Coventry. And then you can just like say, well, since it's broken, yeah, okay, this is there. That way you are still maintaining this non-hubristic approach, because, you know, you were smoked out rather than like declaring it. And I think that it was a misstep for them to have gone too early, because now everything bad that happens to Liverpool is blamed on that, even though there's a very strong possibility that it's got nothing to do with that. But that doesn't matter to us, because we are all about the narrative.
Mm.
We're not interested in the underlying stats behind stuff.
Narrative all the way. But the narrative of that announcement certainly wasn't the fact that Liverpool were trying to sell the Flower on the Wall documentary series to some streaming service, was it, Jan?
Definitely not. Definitely not. And strangely, they've not managed to sell it to anyone at all, so it seems.
So it's just as well, then.
Yes, exactly. Maybe they're trying to retain exclusive rights to the implosion that their season's become. Thing is, though, if he manages to turn around, which is not going to happen, but if he manages to turn around, I think they'll probably find themselves inundated with bids for that. But yeah, if it had gone a different way, I think there might have been a bit more interest there. But it just feels like it's petering out, really, doesn't it, for Liverpool?
Yeah, it really does. But we're not going to be talking about clubs and end of seasons at the moment. No, no, not when there's conversation about administration and finance that we could do instead.
My favourite subject.
Why do we do it to ourselves, man?
What? Why do we talk about things that we barely understand? I don't know.
Understand that hardly anyone is interested in.
Well, luckily, the story this week is breaking. And also, details are very, very sketchy. So we can get away with it. We can get away with not being entirely across them, not entirely understanding it. And I think we can get away with it. It's more of a point of telling our listeners that this is what's going on and how it all fits in the grand scheme of things, I think. Because today, this is Monday evening, 29th of April. We're in the middle of a breaking news story. The Premier League have met today and they have decided in principle to introduce a new spending limits. It's going to replace PSR. PSR, this unsatisfactory system that they've had in place and will still be in place next season, which effectively means that clubs can't lose more than £105 million over the space of 3 years. We've kind of got our heads around it. This is the thing that Forest have fallen foul of and Everton have fallen foul of this year and been deducted points for. It's not really the sort of things that City have been falling foul of. Those 115 charges are something else, apparently. But apparently that's all coming to a head soon as well. Richard Masters said last week that it was coming to a head. But Richard Masters says a lot of things. They had a vote today to say what system they would be going for. And it looks like they're going to go for this anchoring system, whereby the amount of money a club can spend on its squad is now linked directly with the amount of money that the bottom-placed club gets from TV revenue. So at the moment, we think it's going to be about five times what the bottom club gets, which works out about £500 million, so 500 million for your squad costs. Obviously, there's going to be workarounds on this, as there was with the previous financial fair play rules, when clubs could end up ploughing money into their youth teams because they were exempt, or ploughing money into their women's team, or allocating costs to their women's team, like new coaching facilities that were shared use, so that those payments could get written out of the equations. So there is probably going to be workarounds in this, because they usually are. Only three teams voted against these ones. It was Man City, unsurprisingly, Man United and Aston Villa. Chelsea abstained, but everyone else thought this is a good idea. What do we think of this as an idea?
The timing seems interesting to me, because obviously the profitability and sustainability has been in the news and on this pod quite a lot of late.
Yeah.
And Everton and Forest, as you say, have fallen foul of it. And it looks like Leicester will next season, now that they're definitely coming up, although now this might throw that into question. But to be fair, they said they're not going to bring this into 25-26, so hopefully Leicester still gets theirs, because we're all waiting for that. When you've got an organisation that's making its own rules on this kind of thing, I always just get a bit worried. It'll be interesting to see if and when the regulator turns up, whether they do anything on this, I don't know. But the first thing I thought of when this came up was, what happens if you breach it? Because at the moment, the Premier League have been quite robust, I think, in charging clubs that breach it by taking points off them, which I think is the right thing to do. But what happens if they breach this? Is that going to change in some way? Is it going to be linked, as we talked about the other week, to some kind of luxury tax if they breach it? I'd just like to see whether this has actually got a backbone, or whether this is just kind of a way of them making it look like they're continuing to be robust with a new system that they say is going to be better, or whether it's just a way of letting the bigger clubs spend more money. I don't know. And that was a gasp, by the way, from me when you said £500 million, because even though I've been doing this for years and we talk about astronomical amounts of money all of the time, it's still amazing to think that a club can spend £500 million on wages.
And be shit.
and be shit. Chelsea. We're talking about you, Chelsea. Actually, on that, this is interesting. Because it's linked to squad costs and player wages, is this something that they're trying to push onto the players? Because if you're in an industry that earns a lot of money for the organisation you represent, you deserve to get a good chunk of that money, I believe. I'm a bit of a lefty, but if it was me, I'd want my money. I want my money. Hopefully this won't chip away at the amounts that the players get for making the spectacle what it is.
It was interesting that the PFA have sort of like said, well, we'd be very interested to see what the proposal is in more detail, but we are very much opposed to a salary cap. But I suspect that there could be salary cap issues here. But that said, one of the reasons why the Premier League is such a strong team is because it pays the most money to its players. So if it stops doing that, then it's possible that it could lose some players, it could fail to attract the best players. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, they pay significantly more than most leagues. La Liga, Serie A, Bundesliga, certainly you're going to have to go some way to be able to match the spending that the Premier League do, even with this, if it turns out to be a cap. The thing that crosses my mind about it is it's based upon the centralised contracts for the television deals, which is a substantial amount of money. But of course, there's other ways in which clubs make money. The issue can then be is like, well, how do we find ways of how do we divert funds into other income streams that are not subject to this rule and then presumably are not subject to any rules apart from the laws of the land? So all we have to worry about is not breaking the law and rather than not breaking our own laws. So I would suggest that there'll be all manners of creative way of getting money into the club.
Yeah, but it's not about money coming in, though, is it, Terry? It's about money going out. It's restricting that. It doesn't have to be the creative things that we've seen before about where clubs get their money in, like dodgy sponsorship deals. It's about actually spending it on players, isn't it? That's what is going to be a hard limit from now on. But you could find that clubs could, I don't know, make it easier for players to earn money outside of the club. So, for instance, their image rights, which has been a thing that clubs have taken advantage of in the past, where clubs have been able to pay players for their image rights so that doesn't come into like cost controls or comes into a different revenue stream. If they can negotiate sponsorship deals, so if, for instance, the players can have sponsorship deals with their kit manufacturer or something like that, where it isn't necessarily going through the club, but is sort of going in the orbit of the club. All these things have got to be pinned down, but you can imagine that that sort of stuff takes a long time to do. If the independent regulator has any teeth, it might be able to pin that down for them and say, look, no, you can't do that, you can't do this, or you can't use these creative ways of getting around it. But I think in most sports that have put hard salary caps in, this has always been an issue, and there's always been an issue of trying to prove that players were getting money from clubs when maybe they were getting them through other means. These are all things that will come out in the details. And at the moment, as I said at the start of this, we have got scant details about what is actually happening here. Richard Masters was talking last week and said he criticised the new Club World Cup, which comes in next summer, saying about how many more games that's going to be. And for teams like City and Chelsea, they earn 50 million quid from going to that tournament next summer. And so will Borussia Dortmund, Terry. They're on their way there.
They will.
But that's an extra 7 games if they go all the way in it at the end of next season. So it's going to be a long old season for some clubs. But because of the way that this new anchoring system is going to be in place, could you see clubs saying, well, look, we've already complained that there's too many games to play. Why don't we reduce the number of teams down to 18? And I know this is an idea we have touched on briefly before. But if you're suddenly basing your expenditure on the 18th poorest club in the league rather than the 20th poorest club in the league, then obviously that's a little bit more margin to play with, isn't it? So do you think we're going to start seeing lobbying for a reduction in the size of the league? And obviously as well, that spreads around the TV revenue only 18 ways instead of 20.
Yeah, I did think that there might be something creative with that, because effectively you could just go, well, the way that we're going to distribute this is it means that the bottom club somehow, through whatever formula that we make up, gets a little bit more. And that means we can all spend a bit more. But you're quite right. Yeah, if you concentrate that amount over fewer clubs, then it's going to mean that the teams at the top can spend even more, which kind of goes against what they're trying to do. To be honest with you, I can't really see what they're trying to do, because it's almost like they're hamstringing the clubs at the top, which is why you're seeing City and United and bizarrely Villa voting against it. But, you know, those guys aren't going to let that go through unless there's some way that they can get their own way.
One of the reasons why the big clubs might be opposed to it is because they know how to get around the existing profit and sustainability rules, and the smaller clubs, in inverted commas, the lower ranked clubs don't. So Everton's, one of Everton's reasons why they got, ultimately why they got into so much trouble, is because they got massively ambitious and decided that they wanted to get themselves back up to where they felt that they historically should be. And that's sort of like a top club challenging for honours. And they fell in with the wrong crowd and made a complete hash of the money that they spent and all of that. But the bigger clubs who are at the top at the moment, they're better run and they're able to manage their ambitions a lot better. And as a consequence, maybe feel, well, we're not likely to fall foul of PSR, whereas our traditional rivals, for example, will fall foul of PSR. And so that actually works out quite nicely and keeps us here. So that might be a reason. I think that the idea of reducing the Premier League to 18 teams is something that is discussed. We discussed very briefly as a legitimate way to do it. And then, yeah, that would appear on the surface to be an elegant solution of raising the bar somewhat, reducing to 18 clubs. That is quite an attractive idea, I think, for a lot of people from a sporting point of view. Reducing the number of fixtures, if that's a way of reducing the number of fixtures, then I think that is an elegant way of dealing with that issue. But doing it because you want to get round your own rules doesn't really feel like a particularly desirable and honourable way of dealing with these things. You guys will probably be aware that I'm developing a moderate obsession verging on a conspiracy theory about how I think that the Premier League's ultimate end game is to become a franchise and to raise the drawbridge to get rid of promotion and relegation. Now, I think for many good reasons, that's a stupid and a fallacy and will never happen. But I earnestly believe that there will be people in the Premier League who think that that's a good idea, because they'll look at other leagues and they'll say, this is what we should do. I just don't think they'll be allowed to get away with it is the only thing. And one of the options might be to try and use this as a way of discouraging or making it harder for the smaller clubs to get into the Premier League. And I wonder whether or not that's something that is about this. I'm not certain that I can make that connection here, but I'm constantly looking for it. And so I think about these things whenever the Premier League do stuff like this. I think that, what's your end game? What are you after?
Well, Serie A voted against reducing down to 18 teams in February. The only teams that wanted it in Serie A were Juve, Milan, Inter and Roma. So the three teams that wanted the European Super League and Roma. Everyone else decided against it. But over there, it's slightly different because their TV deals are based on all of the games being shown, where it's not over here. Over here, even with the new deal, which is 270 games being shown live, that's a big hike up on what it is at the moment. You'd still be able to show 270 live games if you reduced it down to 18 teams. So I think 18-team leagues have 306 games a season. So there'd only be 36 games that wouldn't be shown live. Wouldn't give you a lot more wiggle room in future negotiations, which could be important going forward. But that's obviously something you have to think about when you pull back, is you've still got to be able to produce the number of games that your broadcast partners want. So that's another reason why 18 teams may not happen, even though Richard Masters has said, yes, we're playing far too much football. But, okay, what are you going to do about it?
Well, we discussed this last week, didn't they? They know exactly what they're going to do with it. And of course, the issue, of course, Graham, is that reducing the league, because now there's now a word. Now, reducing the league is Turkey's voting for Christmas. It's got to be voted through with a majority. Probably, I would suggest something like that would have to be voted through unanimously. The clubs aren't going to vote for that. Why would they? I mean, like, why would you vote for that? So I can't see that. I have a question, though. I mean, and this goes back to, and I'm all for financial prudence and strong governance and all of this, but I still want to know, why do they feel it's necessary to do this? Like, some of the richest people on the planet are involved in this league. Why are they bothering with this? It's because there's a strata of regulation above us, maybe by UEFA, that says you can only spend X much and participate in our competitions. I mean, I'm a little bit thick on this. I mean, why when you've got all the money in the world, are you even worried about, like, curbing your spending? You know, beyond the fact that you don't like paying players that much money. What's the thinking behind it?
Personally, I think it's down to the fact that they know that it can't go on forever and it can't continue to grow like this. And so what is the even worse look is if clubs like Everton's money worries are not done by a long shot, because they were relying on money that was being funneled through a guy who is now under sanctions. They've got this new stadium, but I don't know if they know where the money's going to come from to pay for it. yeah, it's going to be a difficult few seasons for Everton. I think they've got away with it this year, by hook or by crook. But how long they can survive like that is another thing. So I think there are clubs that are in danger. I think, obviously, as well, the pressure is coming from the independent regulator, that there is scrutiny on the Premier League, scrutiny on football in general, about clubs going under in the EFL, and about sustainability, really, about how long clubs can go on spending large amounts of money and getting themselves in holes, just trying to get to the top. And also, as well, I think they want to try and do it because they want to stop City from dominating the league. There is that. They want to try and do anything to stop the Premier League becoming boring, which would be a threat to future TV deals.
Yeah, and you've got that coming with Newcastle as well, haven't you, potentially?
Potentially,
once they've ramped up their revenues, they can start spending a lot of money, and that would make it ultra boring, just a two-horse race.
So that plays into the narrative of the traditional successful clubs like Man United, like Liverpool, for example, looking upon Manchester City and, yes, you know, conceivably Newcastle, and seeing them as this sort of like nouveau riche, somewhat vulgar people who are here to steal our thunder and take away our trophies and our glory, and that it's a lot about that. Is that a fair analysis now?
I think so. I think that's what most people would suspect. Certainly looking at them, though, I would say that the traditional clubs, these are the architects of things like Project Big Picture, are going to be looking at this and say, well, we are the ones who sell the products of the Premier League. It's because of us that we have got so many subscribers willing to pay loads of money a month to watch this league. And in some respect, they are right, because they do have a lot of fans. But that's quite a short-term thing. And I know football is very short-term in its planning. But, you know, you give it another 20 years and Man City will have a global following. Well, it already does, because it has some of the best players playing for them. So it's generating a whole legion of fans on a global scale. Whether or not that's enough in the UK to keep those TV revenues coming in, I think they look on anything as a threat at the moment. I think they'll look on anything that diminishes the amount of money coming in. Of course, it's not them. It's not Man United or Liverpool's fault that there could be a disruption to the status quo. But it's not even the status quo anymore. I mean, Man United haven't won the title in over a decade. They're limited to winning League Cups nowadays. I don't know what Liverpool's going to be like with Arne Slot in control. I mean, do we think that they're just suddenly going to turn things around and become competitive again?
Not straight away, though. There's a lot of work to be done there. But you made a really good point there on the number of games that are going to be in the new TV deal, because that's almost diluted the deal somewhat, isn't it? Because Sky got a very good deal out of it. So the Premier League were forced to give more product away to actually get the same amount of revenue in.
Exactly.
So maybe there is and also we've talked about in France and Italy, they were struggling to get the TV deals that they were hoping to get in terms of revenue from TV deals, I mean to say. So maybe this is the Premier League looking at it and going, well, we need to guard against that happening to us. It probably won't happen short term, but we've just had to give a load of product away for free just to get the same amount of money in the door, lads. So, you know, maybe we need to just be a bit more careful going forward. You know, it's the Premier League's just been accelerating, growing and growing and growing. And I know we keep saying that the doommongers say it can't go on forever, but I kind of think it can't go on forever. And maybe you're actually starting to see, when they're looking at how much they're giving away and what they're getting back in return, that their accountants are just looking at this going, you know, this isn't going to last forever. There's going to be a change here, potentially. So let's make the change now ourselves to make sure that we don't fall foul of it if something does radically change.
And as well, if the bubble does burst, then it's not as if the clubs involved are going to just shrug their shoulders and say, oh, well, it was nice while it lasted, wasn't it, lads?
Yeah, hardly.
Well, obviously, a lot of people are looking at, and Terry's already mentioned, what role the independent regulator will have if it comes in. I think, because at the moment, I mean, we still don't know what sort of powers it's going to have. And the way that the Premier League has actually been lobbying Parliament, there could be any amount of amendments. And the way the government have sneaked a few things into the bill as well, like protecting the UK's overseas interests, like it's obviously some kind of trade tool. So there are worrying things ahead as far as the independent regulator is concerned. So it's not all lovely good news as far as that's concerned. But also something else has cropped up over the last few days, in that the Spanish government have set up an independent regulator basically to manage the RFEF, because obviously the problems that they had, we started talking about at the beginning of this season, with Rubiales obviously being in and out of court all season and being chucked out of his role of as head of the Spanish FA. And his successor has also been in and out of court as well. So he's been sidelined as well. So now that there is no one running it, the government has stepped in. But FIFA is keeping a beady eye on that and making sure that, well, this isn't government interference, is it? Because you're meant to be hosting the World Cup in 2030. So, yeah, we don't like government interference. They don't like government interference, do they, Terry?
They don't like government interference. No, they like to have their own people in these kind of positions. I mean, that football, even in some of the poorest countries, is capable of raising huge amounts of revenue. But it's also, FIFA's got an awful lot of revenue that it likes to give out to people that, you know, it can rely on, you know, spending the money with the game's best interests at heart. I'm slowing down because I am being sarcastic. So they take this kind of lofty position as if to say, well, football is everyone's game and governments shouldn't interfere. And this historically is in relation to the government making direct appointments into national federations and firing people or ousting them and then replacing them with other people. And it is associated with a more ham-fisted, rather crude form of intervention from governments that perhaps don't enjoy a great deal of strength in their own position and are using football in order to try and gain that. And that's the sort of moral justification for FIFA taking the view that they do. I don't think FIFA are saying that governments are not allowed to stop federations from violating national law or operating in such a way that can cause a violation in national law, and particularly in, say, let's say, for example, Spain, where you have had, you know, as Graham's outlined, two high-profile officials in the Spanish FA in and out of court, then it is not inappropriate, I think, for the government to take action and intervene. You know, there's a huge public interest in football being run properly in Spain, as there is in the UK. Whether or not this is the correct thing to do is something that I think the Spanish are more entitled to express a view on than I am. But nevertheless, I don't think it is, as a matter of principle, unreasonable to do something like this. But Graham's right to point out, obviously, the fact that Spain are a co-host of the World Cup. But the Spanish government will also be aware that they are going to be co-hosting the World Cup. And they don't want that kind of scrutiny, the wrong kind of scrutiny being cast onto them at what is actually 2030 is not that far off, is it?
No.
Let's face it. It'll be upon us in a flash. But yeah, I would be surprised if FIFA were to intervene, I think.
I think it's more of a question of we've got your eye on you here. But it does lend sort of, I think, it strengthens Richard Masters' hands, I think, if he's got an example to look at and say, well, look, you've got FIFA keeping their eye on Spain. But of course, if they don't do anything with Spain, then it does give the independent regulator a bit more of a stronger hand. Oh, no, it's all to come, isn't it? Oh, so interesting if you'd like international administration of football. Yeah, yeah. So plenty to talk about, I think, for the next 6 months for us.
Yay!
Yeah.
I mean, do we need to really talk about the Euros? Probably not. We should just be following this story all the way through. That's what we should be doing.
Well, what we could talk about is the football that will be happening this weekend, because it's the League One playoffs start across this weekend. Barnsley versus Bolton on Friday night, and Oxford United versus Peterborough United on Saturday night as well. And we've got the final weekend in the Championship. Yeah, no one wants to go up, apart from Leicester, of course. No one else wants to go up, do they?
Well, actually, given what I said earlier, I don't think even Leicester want to go up, to be honest with you. So Leeds went to QPR in a game I covered for the box set. And that, just every single metric I looked at that was that Leeds were just going to hand QPR their arses. And the complete... the complete opposite happened, which does make for an interesting final day for the Championship. Leeds have they could have wrapped that up, and instead they got beaten 4-0 at QPR.
Yeah.
Crazy. So they've got Southampton at the weekend, haven't they?
They have.
Southampton sadly didn't go on the tear that I hoped they would, but they could still spoil the party for Leeds.
They could indeed. And Terry, you'll be covering Liverpool-Tottenham this weekend. obviously Liverpool still had the faintest mathematical possibility of being in the title race, but nothing more. And Tottenham still looking for that fourth spot, which they have to get if they want to get into the Champions League now.
Yeah, the energy in this game is going to be interesting because the last time these two played, it was much earlier in the season, and they were both in rambunctious form, if that's the right way of looking at it. I think that Postecoglou's chaos ball is kind of looking a little bit. I mean, they did play well against Arsenal and participated in a vigorous game of football, but my feeling is that perhaps they're kind of running out of steam, and we know that Liverpool are. And the last game was fantastic because he had all of that massive, tremendous VAR chaos, all of that going on. And it was just it was one of the signature games of the first half of the season, particularly Postecoglou, and drove the narrative of Ange to a certain degree. This time around, I feel it might be a little bit too sort of like punch drunk, you know, fighters who are waiting for the final bell so that they can just like go. But there is work for the pair of them to do. And this is the problem, of course, is that they've both got work to do. Surely Liverpool won't win the league from this spot. But they've got to believe that they can, otherwise they shouldn't bother turning up. And surely I think it's too much for Tottenham. But again, they have to believe. So we'll see. Yeah, it's two fighters dead on their feet, I think, this one. But that will bring, I'm sure, its own entertainment. And hopefully the VAR will get involved, and then we're going to have even more fun, and we're going to have a good old chin wag about it on Monday.
And as for me, I'll be covering the big WSL game between Man City and Arsenal, where Jonas Eilervald can stick the last nail in Emma Hayes' season by not turning up against Man City and allowing them to score a barrel full of goals and steal the WSL title. The last thing possible for Chelsea to win, having gone out of the Champions League, having been knocked out of the FA Cup in the semi-final and lost the Conti Cup to Arsenal. I'm not sure Arsenal are really going to put their backs into that game, but it's in the box set anyway, just so that we can all watch it.
And hubris as well.
Hubris, Emma Hayes. Yes.
Yeah, on notice. Yeah. So this rule isn't restricted to the men's game as well. It's got to be said.
Got to be said. And if you want to see what we think of all those games that are coming up this weekend, then get along to sofpodcast.com, click on the link for the weekend box set and subscribe. And it'll be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry Zappalon, it's goodbye.
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 We are at Sound of Football on X, Blue Sky, and Instagram, so feel free to get in touch there. Or head to our website, sofpodcast.com. Don't forget to rate and review us.
I don't know why I said goodbye in this way. I don't know.
That's how a Zaffalon would talk. I think
that, yeah. So, am I a Zaffalon or is my name Zaffalon?
I think you're just Zaffalon, like, you know, Madonna or.
All right.
Oh, nice. Yeah. No, I can cope with that. Yeah. No, yeah. I'm an artiste.
Yeah.
I was beginning to think detergent. You know. Washing machines live longer with Zaffalon, and so on, you know. But anyway, it's been that kind of day, so yeah. I do feel a bit like a detergent.
But you're very useful for like people like us who live in hard water areas, though.